Okay, good evening, everybody. Today is February 21st, 2024, and this is the Denver Kahila Wednesday night class. We are in the series dealing with murder in the Bible. Last week we discussed the invention of murder and the episode of Cain killing Hevel. And today we are going to be discussing Moshe. Moshe's murder of the Egyptian taskmaster in Egypt, which is an episode we read of just a few weeks ago in Parshat Shemot. So maybe the story is fresh in our mind, but we'll review it anyway by reading the Psukim, and feel free to jump in and ask questions as we go. And if you're online and you want to use the raise hand function, please go ahead. By all means, please do that. And if you want to just speak, just unmute yourself and go for it. Okay. All right. And for those of you in person, I'm sure we'll. Okay. So here's the story. First of all, Moshe is born, and under the edict of Paro, that all the males are going to be killed, thrown into the river. And so Moshe's mother, she hides him for as long as she can, and once that's no longer tenable, she puts him in a little basket and floats him down the river. Bat Paro, Paro's daughter, finds him, and through a combination of using Moshe's own mother as a wet nurse and raising him in the palace, Moshe grows up. Not clear how old he is here. And this is where the story picks up. Vayehi bayamim ahem. This is source number one on the source sheet on your screen. Vayehi bayamim ahem. Vayigdal Moshe. Vayetze el Echav. So sometime after this, meaning after Moshe is born, he grows up. He has grown up, and he went out to his kinsfolk, to his brothers and sisters. Vayar b'sivlotam. And he sees their labors. He witnesses their suffering. Vayar ish mitzri makeh ish ivri me echav. And he sees an Egyptian beating one of his Hebrew brethren. Vayifen cho vacho. He looks around. Vayar ki ein ish. And he sees no one's there, which is unclear what that means. Was there no one there? Well, we'll see what that could mean. Vayachet ha-Mitzri, and he strikes the Mitzri. He doesn't say he kills the Mitzri, but we're assuming he does because the next thing is very mafioso. But it's menehu b'chol. He buries him in the sand. He gets rid of the. I just finished watching The Sopranos, so I have the whole mafia thing in my mind. And he buries. So he buries him in the sand. This is the episode we are going to. So, before we get into the sources. I'm interested. Many of you may have heard this story before. So I'm interested, what you think about what Moshe did. Was it good? Was it not good? What anyone? Let's start with the people here who are alive and in person. What are your thoughts on this?
I guess my first question is, so Moshe is adopted as a baby, as you said, by Paro's daughter. What do we know, or what do the commentators say about how he develops his sense of Jewish identity? Because it's very strong in these psukim, right? He sees he says his kinsmen, his kinsfolk. So how does that sense of, his Jewish identity get nurtured while he's living in Paris?
Right. So it could be that the answer to that question lies in the fact that he was really brought up. It's possible he was actually brought up at least till he was weaned in his biological parents' home. Right. It's the fact that his mother was his wet nurse It's unclear. I don't think he was going back and forth. I think that he was born, floated down the river, found by Bat Paro, given back, coincidentally, of course, it wasn't a coincidence, to the mom to take care of him. So it's possible that that's where it comes from. I mean, it doesn't come from the palace. It probably comes from his the possibility that he grew up in a Jewish home. And Lean could be 7, 8, right back then. Possibly. Yeah. All right. Any other? Mice, you got anything? How does the story
Yeah,
make you feel?
along the same lines as Josh, but with a different angle, is he also grew up in a house of royalty where, he's a pharaoh.
Right.
If something bothers him, they kill people.
Okay.
Not like atypical for him, that experience either.
Oh, so this is interesting. On our table right now, we have a really interesting combination. On the one hand, what sets him out to go and check on his brethren and be concerned about them is the possibility that he had some sort of Jewish upbringing. But his sort of courage to actually kill somebody may come from the fact that he had an Egyptian second half of his upbringing. So these two things sort of combining to create a situation where Moshe was moved by what he saw, yet had it not been for the fact that he was a prince, he may have not done this. Okay. Anyone on screen have any thoughts about, the first time you learned about this event? You learned this story. How does it make you feel? Are you proud of Moshe? Are you wondering if Moshe was justified? What are your thoughts? Anyone on screen want to weigh in? Anyone on Zoom?
Rabbi,
Yes.
is the woman who found him in the Nile, was she a princess then?
I
I don't
believe
know
so,
her.
yeah. Paro's daughter.
Pharaoh's daughter. Well, wasn't she supposed to be interested in the Hebrews or converting or thinking of it or just interested or did not go along with the whole Mishigas with her father?
We have no idea. We don't know
Oh.
anything else about her other than this story. Yeah. That's all we have on. Okay, so with that then, let's dive into an interesting question. I did not put the source for this question here. Source number two, I'll have to try to find it. Where it's from. I'm sorry I don't have it. I've been trying to look for it as you guys were talking, but I cannot find what the source is. But we're going to read it anyway because it raises a very interesting question. I'm not sure who this person is, but the person is Mitkashem Me'od Baharigat Moshe Et HaMitzri. This raises a really hard question on Moshe's murder, killing of the Egyptian. Shekafi hanira, yihyeh ma'asehu shelo b'mishpat. Right, at first glance, it seems that Moshe's killing of this person was not just. Ki eich ba'avor hakoto ish ivri yehargenu. How is it possible or permitted that because the Egyptian was hitting the Hebrew, Moshe should kill him? Ushvicha dam huzharu alehem b'nei adam kodem matan Torah. So just in case you're thinking, well, the Torah wasn't given yet, so the prohibition of murder wasn't given yet. No, because murder is one of the Sheva Mitzvot b'nei Noach, one of the seven Noahide laws, which was given already. So that's already on the books. Umali shofech dam ivri o dam mitzri. Interesting. And what's the difference if you're killing a Hebrew or an Egyptian? Also, what good would this do for Bnei Yisrael, for the Jewish people, if Moshe kills this person secretly? This is revenge or vigilante justice and anger without any, let's say, due process. And people have tried to answer this question, and the answers are not satisfactory. And even if you want to say that the Egyptian was chayav mita bidei shamayim, that the Egyptian was guilty of a capital crime that God would have killed him for, ein dino lehareg ben adam, it still would not justify Moshe killing the person with his own hand. So I have to tell you that this is like an interesting take, right? Because I think, and this is why I was asking the question earlier, when we're taught this in school and we read this, we're like, yay, Moshe, fantastic, right? Moshe standing up for the helpless Jew, and he's flexing his Jewish identity, and this is what we would hope for. But this raises an interesting question. So that's what we're going to try to figure out to look at today. A couple of different approaches to this. So there's one approach that teaches that Moshe's actions were justified and admirable. Before we get into the sources, I'll also read something from, which is not in your sources, something from the Rambam's Mor Nevuchim, right? The Rambam's guide of the perplexed or for the perplexed, which is explaining the characteristic of a Jewish leader. And this is found in section two, part two of the Guide for the Perplexed. It's not in the sources, so I'll just read it. He writes as follows. He's suggesting that one of the characteristics of a leader is that they have what's called divine inspiration, not quite prophecy, but something we call Ruach HaKodesh, where it's a sort of a lower level of prophecy, where the person is somehow guided by God. So the Rambam writes, the first degree of prophecy consists in the fact that an individual receives divine help that moves and activates him to a great, righteous, and important action, such as the deliverance of a community of virtuous people from a community of wicked people. Sounds like Purim coming up, or the deliverance of a virtuous and great man, or the conferring of benefits on numerous people. The individual in question finds in himself something that moves and incites him to the action, and that is called Ruach HaKodesh, the Spirit of the Lord. And it is said of the individual who was in such a state that, quote, the Spirit of the Lord came upon him, or the Spirit of the Lord clothed him. This is often the language you find in the Nevi'im, the prophets. And then we get to the point. Know that such a force did not abandon Moshe, our teacher. It was because of this that he was moved to slay the Egyptian and reprove the one who was in wrong among the two men that struggled, which is the next story. After Moshe kills the Egyptian, the next day he goes out and he sees two Jews fighting. The strength of this force in him shows in the fact that when, after having been filled with fear and having fled, he came to Midian to a stranger full of fear, and saw some wrong that was done. Those were those shepherds who were harassing the women at the well. He could not refrain from putting an end to it and was incapable of patience with regard to it, as it says, but Moshe stood up and helped. So the Rambam here, like most of us, is a Moshe's cheerleader, right? Not only was Moshe moved to act on behalf of the weak, it was actually divinely inspired. Can't argue with that, right? Divinely inspired. The Rambam is giving Moshe a pass, more than a pass.
Yeah, it's praise.
He's giving him praise for doing this, as opposed to the previous source, which we saw, where it's far from praise. It's actually questioning Moshe's legitimacy. So with that, let's follow along the lines of the Rambam and see this number of sources that see what Moshe did as justifiable and admirable. So this first source comes from a collection called Otsar HaMidrashim, a collection of Midrashim. You see it's composed in 1915, and it collects over 200 sort of minor Midrashim in the book. Okay? And in this book, in this Midrash, we have the following. Miketz Tetvav Shana. So Moshe, according to this Midrash, is 15 years old. Asher Gadal Moshe Beit Paro. Hoil Hanar Lerot Pnei Aviv Imo. Vayar B'Sivlotam. He wanted to go see his parents. Somehow he knew maybe he was adopted. And he sees their suffering. He sees what's going on, the Egyptian hitting one of his brethren. When the one who was being hit sees Moshe, he runs to ask Moshe for help. Moshe was well respected in Paro's house. He was a prince. Vayomru lo Adoni, Aish ha-mitri hazeh ba-el beiti ba-layla. So what this midrash is doing is fascinating. It's filling in the blanks. All we see is the Egyptian hitting the Hebrew. But now this midrash says, what led to that? What went on? So this Hebrew, this Jew, says to Moshe, this Egyptian came into my house at night, v'yasreini, he tied me up, v'yavo al ishti. He raped my wife, le'enai, in front of me. V'yatama v'keshet nafshi l'kachta, now he wants to kill me. V'hi kasher Moshe shama et hadavar hara hazeh, v'yifen cho v'cho v'yar ki einish. Moshe hears this terrible story. He looks around, see there's no one there, which here seems to mean no one, no witnesses. He hits the Mitzri and staves the Hebrew. This is great. Moshe goes back to the king, and the Jew goes back to his house. Terrible end. Now he wants to divorce his wife because she's been violated. And now they want to kill the husband, and he runs away. Okay, that last part, not necessarily.
Didn't see that coming.
No. This is like an honor killing. But here, according to this midrash, what Moshe did was justifiable and admirable because, first of all, he was saving the life of the Hebrew who was about to be killed by the Egyptian, and raped the woman. He was guilty of a capital crime, and so Moshe kills him. So it's interesting because it's more than. It's more than just this Egyptian was hitting. Because you want, like, why? I guess the question is, why does the Midrash give us all these details when the Torah doesn't? Like, what are the rabbis getting at? Like, it's an interesting.
Hitting isn't enough.
Right. It's an interesting question. Like, when you have some detail in the Torah, like last week there was no detail. Cain and Hevel go into the field, they talk. Torah doesn't say what they talk about. So the Midrashim and the commentaries. It's because it's a total blank. But here, there are details. He was hitting him. Why do the rabbis have to give us more details? He entered the house at night, he timed it up, he raped his wife. So I think like Josh said, the thing on the one hand, the rabbis are suggesting that hitting is not enough. That if the Egyptian had just been hitting the Jew, it would not have been justified for Moshe to kill him. So the rabbis sort of backfill the story and say, no, he was doing more than hitting him. He was doing all these terrible things. And look, it led to the whole family falling apart. The whole story is just tragic. And but nonetheless, in the end, they end up with the conclusion that what Moshe did was justifiable and admirable. There is a a parallel midrash in Shemot Rabbah, which is source number 5. You could read this in English. Our rabbis, a blessed memory, say the taskmasters were Egyptian and the foremen were Israelite. One taskmaster was appointed over 10 foremen, and one foreman was appointed over 10 Israelites. The taskmaster would go to the homes of the foremen early in the morning to get them out to work with the crowing of the rooster. Once, the Egyptian taskmaster went to an Israelite foreman and directed his glance at his wife, who was beautiful and flawless. He arrived there at the time of the crowing of the rooster and got him out of the house. The Egyptian returned and consorted with his wife, and she thought it was her husband, and she was impregnated. So now this is even worse. By the way, this is shades of, but she didn't realize who it was. It's shades of the Rachel and Leah. It's very interesting, right? That I'm not sure how that happens, but she thought the man coming into her bed was her husband, and she got pregnant. Her husband returned and saw the Egyptian emerge from his house. He asked her, "Did he touch you?" She said, "Yes, and I thought he was you." Once the taskmaster realized that the Israelite had sensed what he had done, he returned him to hard labor and was beating him, seeking to kill him. Moshe was looking at him and watching him, and he saw by means of the divine spirit what he had done, sort of shaved to the Rambam a little bit, that he was now in the first case, the Jewish guy, the Hebrew, told Moshe what happened. Here, he's guided by a divine spirit about what happened and saw what he was going to do to him in the field. He said, "This one is certainly liable for execution, as it is written, 'One who strikes a person shall be put to death.' Moreover, he consorted with Datan's wife, and for that he is liable for execution. And instead, the adulterer and the adulteress shall be put to death. This is what is written. He turned this way and that, and saw there was no man." So here, this midrash is a little bit more insight in terms of Moshe's. Here, Moshe is giving us his legal reasoning for it. He quotes a pasuk in the Torah, which hadn't been given yet. Okay, that's a typical rabbinic move. But this is adultery, attempted murder, and Moshe kills him. So another example of a justified and admirable position that Moshe was doing was totally right, totally fair.
Yet there we have to add to the list of crimes.
Similarly, adds to the list of crimes. Exactly. What's interesting is you could, based on other verses in the Torah, translate what Moshe saw, maket ishivri, as killing, not just killing. But it seems like these midrashim don't want to do that. Because right. So it could mean hitting, or could mean smiting. Had it meant smiting, had the rabbis thought it meant smiting, they could have left it alone. But maybe they think it means hitting, in which case they have to explain what type of hitting it is and the backstory. Or they have to say, no, it does mean smiting. Don't get confused. This doesn't mean hitting. This means smiting. And the reason he was killing him is because either he witnessed, the Egyptian wanted to get rid of the witness who now knows that he violated the woman. Okay. The next source is from Philo, which is an interesting source. I don't think we're going to read it entirely, but essentially, it seems like he's going along the lines of some other midrashim, some of the ones that we saw. If you look, sort of, we scroll down towards the bottom of the source, where you have number 44. It talks about the savage ways that these taskmasters would treat the Jews. One of these men, the most violent, when in addition to yielding nothing of his purpose, he was even exasperated. Moshe had, well, here, what the rabbis do is they fill in what it means when it says Moshe went down to see the suffering of his brethren. It doesn't just mean that. He actually asked, I guess as a prince, some of these Egyptian taskmasters to take it easy a little. and they don't listen. It's, as it says after number 44, one of these men, the most violent of them, when in addition to yielding nothing of his purpose, he was even exasperated at the exhortations of Moshe and rendered more savage by them, beating those who did not labor with energy and unremittingly at the work which was imposed upon them, and insulting them and subjecting them to every kind of ill treatment, so as even to be the death of many. Moshe slew, thinking the deed a pious action. And indeed, it was a pious action to destroy one who only lived for the destruction of others. And then, this is really interesting, when the king heard of his action, he was very indignant, thinking it an intolerable thing. Not for one man to be dead, or for another to have killed him, whether justly or unjustly, but for his grandson not to agree with him, and not to look upon his friends or his enemies as his own, but to hate persons whom the king loved, and to love persons who the king looked upon as outcasts. So here, Philo sets up this terrible, this dynamic between Paro and who Philo calls Paro's grandson, Moshe, his adopted grandson, that he's actually rebelling against, he's rebelling against the king. Later on, Philo goes on to say that he had already heard a lot of bad things about Moshe, but he was willing to let them go, but not now. Once it goes to murder, Paro can't let that go, even though it's in the family, and he goes after it. And that's why he has to run away. But so here too, sort of riffing off these midrashim, Moshe sees something terrible in the sense that these taskmasters are about to kill the Jews. Here, there's no rape involved. It's just straight on violence toward the slave from the taskmaster. And he killed him. And then adds this additional sort of neat element of the family dynamic. See, right, it's interesting. Right? Pyro doesn't really care. Mm-hmm. So interesting what Philo says. Pyro doesn't care if people are alive or dead. He just doesn't want his own house torn apart, and doesn't want his own grandson rejecting him, which is quite an indictment on him. Okay, let me stop there because we've gone through a number of sources, and we'll start with people on the phone, on Zoom, excuse me. If you have any comments or questions about what we've done so far, we have one more in the Moshe what did a right thing category of teaching before we look at a really interesting midrash that looks at things the other way. So anyone on Zoom have a comment or a question about anything that we've done about the way the rabbis are reading this story or anything at all? Okay, I'm going to take that as a no. Anyone here? Mish, Josh? Okay. You got something, Mish? Okay.
Yeah.
This next one I thought was really, really interesting. David Svi Hoffman. David Svi Hoffman offers a very different approach. So up until now, we would say that these midrashim defend Moshe on legal ground, right? Moshe saw murder or attempted murder, and Moshe goes out to save the person who's the victim, which is a laudable and admirable thing to do, especially if you consider that this Egyptian has already sort of violated the Jewish woman, the Hebrew woman, or he's a savage taskmaster who even asked, after being asked to take it down a notch, makes it worse. All of these are sort of legal arguments, and in fact, in one of the midrashim, Moshe quotes psukim in the Torah in the rabbi's mind, they're building a legal case about what Moshe did was okay. Rabbi Zvi Hoffman does something different. He says the following: "Vayachat ha-mitri, and Moshe killed the Egyptian. Yehiyez ze'it tzedek, we would think that this is that this lack of justice. Im nidun b'maseh zeh minikudat mabato shel hamishpat haragil. We would think that this is unjustifiable if we looked at this from the perspective of normal justice. Hayavesh, dry. The ne'orer et hasheila, and would raise the question. Im amnam rashai haya Moshe lanishat hamitri lakoto mavet al shum she'ina ben Yisrael. And we would ask the question, does Moshe have the right to kill this Egyptian because he wasn't Jewish? We don't have to go down the road of Rabbi Yaakov Tzvi Mecklenburg. Alpi HaMidrash, Shemitri ze bikesh la'anot ben Yisrael ze ad mavet, that the Egyptian was going to hit the Jew until death. Meaning we don't have to accept the legal argument. But we saw in the Midrashim, and he's quoting someone else, if you're hitting someone, you deserve to die. If you're killing someone, you deserve to die. Kol kavanato shel Moshe kan lo haita ela la'amod limin achiv ha'meune. Moshe's single kavana, his single intention, was to stand up for his brother who was being afflicted. The only way to do this was to kill the Egyptian. If he didn't kill him, then the Egyptian, and just hit him, the Egyptian would have been doubly cruel down the road. Is this the time to ask a legal question? The makom, listen to this. Shekol zichuyot adam nirmasot beregel gava, that all rights of the person were trodden upon by the feet of the haughty one, of the haughty ones, meaning Egyptian. So, what is David Tzvi Hoffman saying? He's rejecting the legal argument, and saying what was going on. This was lawless.
Yeah.
This was the jungle. Moshe's not going to bother with a legal question of, did he kill him? Is he about to kill him? Did he violate the wife? Did he not violate? It's immaterial. What he's saying, when the Jews have lost all protection, they lost all rights, any protection. Well, if that's the way they're going to operate, that's the way I'm going to. Right, so on the one level, it sort of raises Moshe to being this like superhero.
Yeah.
On the other hand, it's saying that Moshe almost like he took on the character.
Yeah.
Like what you said, Moshe, at the beginning, he took on the character of the Egyptian. If they're going to act in a lawless way, then I'm going to act in a lawless way. And it doesn't really matter whether this person is really guilty of a capital crime. Because if I don't kill him, he's just gonna hit someone worse tomorrow, and the next day, and the next day, and the next day. And someone has to sort of send a message that this is wrong, even if he doesn't have a legal argument to stand on. So I found that to be a defense of Moshe, but not a legal defense of Moshe, rather more of a law of the jungle. Survival of the fittest defensively.
Yeah. There's no court system. You can't sue him,
right?
You know, for physical injury or something
right.
like that.
What's it going to do? He has no recourse.
Argue with them, right?
Right.
It's not going to work.
There's no recourse. This actually reminds me of this fascinating tshuva that was written. It's found in Shelot Utshuvot Mimamakim, which was written by, I'm going to look it up real quickly. Remember Ephraim Oshri. Ephraim Oshri was the rabbi during the Shoah of the Kovno ghetto. And he survived the war. And After the war, he published many of the questions he got during the Holocaust in the Kovno Ghetto, and they're just heart-wrenching. He also publishes some questions he got after the war. And after the war, someone says to him, I've tracked down the Nazi who killed my family, and I want to kill him. And I kill him. And I want to, I know where he lives. He lives in this town. And part of his discussion is, part of Ofri's discussion is, this person has no, doesn't feel like he has justice. And through the context of the conversation, it suggests that maybe he should go to the authorities and say, that guy's a Nazi, and he killed my family, I'm an eyewitness. He's like, that's, you know, right after the war in Europe, he does not feel confident, as you could, for obvious reasons, you could not blame him, that he has recourse. And that's why he wants to take this vigilante route and do it on his own. I'm not going to ruin it for you and tell you what happens. Maybe we'll study it one day because it is a fascinating thing. And that's what's going on here, right? Moshe's saying, the Rav is saying, there's no recourse, there's no court system to go to. The Jews had no rights, and the only way to go about this is to meet violence with violence. It's the rule of the jungle. Okay, so we've seen Moshe defended on a couple of different grounds. We'll just look at this one last source here, Avot Rabbi Natan, before we get to the final two approaches. Here, this is similar to what we saw maybe in the Rambam and also in one of the Midrashim, Avot Rabbi Natan, Vayhi bayamim ahem vayigdal Moshe vayetzei lachiv vayavis avotam vayifen chol v'cho vayarki ein ish. What does it mean there was no person there when he looked around? Ma tamad lomer ki ein ish. What does it mean there was no one there? What happened? This teaches us that Moshe brought the questions before the council of angels who served God. I mean, there were no human beings to hear this case, but Moshe brought it before the angels, and said, "Shall I kill them?" And the angels said, "Yes." Meaning again. This is a different defense of Moshe. This is Moshe had some sort of divine inspiration to go ahead and do this. Okay, we're going to jump over this, that Moshe killing him was unintentional. This is based on a midrash which sort of compares Moshe running away to Moshe creating the Arei Miklat, the cities of refuge, and saying Moshe knows what it feels like. He was an unintentional killer, and he had to run away, and he wants to give unintentional killers an opportunity also to run away. So it's sort of the middle ground.
The intentional killer.
Right, right. So it wasn't that Moshe, he's not praiseworthy or blameworthy. It was an accident. Maybe he was just hitting him, and he went a little too far, and he killed him. Okay. But I want to spend just a few minutes on this midrash. This also comes from that same collection of midrashim that we started with, and this is just unbelievable. This we could spend weeks talking about this midrash. So this is a midrash that tells us what happened on the day Moshe died, his last conversation with God. Okay. And I'd love to hear what you think about Moshe in this conversation, what you think about God in this conversation. This is fantastic stuff. Ukashigia yomo shel Moshe Rabbeinu lipater min ha'olam. When the time came for Moshe to die, Amar le'akadosh baruch hu, hein kavir yomachalamut, the pasuk in the Torah, God says to Moshe, the day of your death, or the days of your death have arrived. Amar lefanav, ribono shel olam, achar kol hayigiya sheigati, tomar li sheamut, lo amut ki echya. Moshe says, after all that I've done, I'm going to die? This is interesting. Did Moshe really expect to live forever? But that's his argument. Okay. Amar le'Akadosh Baruch Hu, Moshe, ben miata, whose son are you? Amar le'ben Amram. I'm Amram's son. And then he says, and who is Amram's father? Yitzhar. And who is Yitzhar's father? Kehat. And who is Kehat's father? Levi. Amar le, God said, v'chulam mimi yetsu ela min Adam Rishon. And all of them came from Adam. Amar le, nishar mehem shum echad chai? Are any of them still alive? I mean, what makes it special? Everyone died. It's better. Amar le, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, v'yata rotze l'chiyot. They all died. And you want to live? Amar le, Ribbono shel Olam. So Moshe now says, wait a second. Adam HaRishon ganav v'achal. Masha lo ratzita. Adam took food that you didn't want him to take. He stole it. V'kinasta alav mita. And you find him or punish him with death. V'ani ganavti klum l'panecha. Have I ever stolen anything from you? So don't say, just because Adam died, I have to die. Adam's guilty of theft. What have I ever done? V'kavar katavta alai avdi Moshe b'chol beiti ne'emanu. You've also written about me in the Torah that I am the most trustworthy person in your whole house. Amar le HaKadosh Baruch Hu l'Moshe. Klum atzar dik mi Adam harishon v'doro. Do you think, Moshe, that you are a greater tzaddik than Adam and his generation? Amar le Cain. Yeah, I think I am. Adam harishon v'chava pita otam nachash. Adam and Eve fell victim to the trickery of the nachash, of the snake, and I brought people life to the snake in the desert. We held up the snake and people were cured. I'm going to go to Kluma Godel mi Noach b'doro. Do you think you're greater than Noach in his generation? Amar le Cain. Yeah, I think I am. Noach evet alav v'al doro me'am abul. The Noach lo bikesh rachamim al doro. You brought the flood on Noach, and Noach didn't even ask for mercy upon his generation. V'ani amarti v'ata antasa chatam v'im ayin mechena misifracha. And I was willing to have myself totally erased from the Torah if you didn't forgive the Jewish people. I came to their defense. Noach didn't. Amar le, klumata gadol mi Avram. God says, I think you're greater than Avram. Shenasiti oto v'asara nisonot. I tested him with 10 tests. Amar le, Yatami menu Yishmael. Well, how great could he be? He had Yishmael. She ibdu banav et banecha, and whose children enslaved your children. Amar le, hataga domi Yitzchak. So God says, okay, you're greater than Yitzchak. Amar le, Yatami chalatzav, Mishi yachriv et beitcha, ubanav yahargu et banecha, toanecha leviecha. The Esav came from him. Look what he did. I'm going to call Baruch Hu Kluma Marti Lachash Taroget Mitzri. And here we get to our. Oh, God says, wait a second. Okay. Who told you to kill the Egyptian? I didn't tell you to kill the Egyptian. Amar Levi Ataha Rakta Kol Bithore Mitzri. Who says, hold on a second. You're angry at me because I killed one Egyptian? You killed every Egyptian firstborn. Vani amut b'shvil mitzri achad, and I have to die for one Egyptian? Amar le HaKadosh Baruch Hu v'yata dome elai meimitu mechaya. You comparing yourself to me? I'm the one who gives life and brings death? Klum ata yachol l'achiyo kamoni. You can't bring people to life like that. So this is an amazing, right? This midrash is just packed with goodies. But just to get it out of the way, right? In this midrash, it's God who's condemning Moshe for killing the Egyptian, right? When Pinchas kills in the Torah, the midrash says that God said, Yasher Koach. Good job, Pinchas. Here, we have a midrash that God says you have no right to kill. We have the Avot Rabbi Natan who says that Moshe did it with Ruach HaKodesh. We have a Midrash that says Moshe did it with HaKodesh. Now we have this dueling Midrash says not only was it not Ruach HaKodesh, God's angry or upset with Moshe, or at least using this event to justify Moshe's death. Because after all, Moshe said, I'm better than Noah, and Adam, and Abram, and Yitzchak, I'm better than all these people. But what gets him? Killing the Mitzri. So Moshe's a fatal mistake, according to these rabbis, was killing the Jews.
Intended. And not hitting the rock. Right, which in the shot of the Torah is that's why he doesn't.
Right. Well, right, and this is correct. Right,
is another act of violence, but not nearly as violent as killing a person.
Right, and this is a new twist on why Moshe didn't get Eretz Yisrael, didn't get the So I mean, there's a lot to say here about Moshe's sort of chutzpah, right, to God. Right, I killed one Egyptian. You killed all the firstborn. Who are you to talk? Right, it's wild. But here, the rabbis here, right? What's interesting to me about this midrash is that the rabbis here are very uncomfortable with what Moshe did. Right, they are mortified because they put that in. They put that into in God, right? That God is mortified. And I just found that to be, this is a real indictment by Chazal, by the rabbis against Moshe for killing the Egyptian. So we see sources, you know, midrashic sources that go. That go both ways. This is one other source here, Menachem Tzioni. He says maybe this was Moshe's youthfulness, because right according to one minute, he's only 15 years old. Echaya Rashai Vakativ Anush Letzadik Loto Ulay Na'aruto Mashla Berucho. Maybe his immaturity, or his ladness, that's a word. Over. Again, an indictment that this was the act of an immature, impetuous, a young man. Had Moshe been a little older, maybe cooler heads would have prevailed. This is. Another sort of suggestion that what Moshe did was wrong. So I'm sure we all sort of fall on different sides of this. But before I dug into this, I really wasn't so aware that there was this sort of strong thread of rabbinic approaches. That maybe that Chazal in the rabbinic mind, what Moshe did was not. And that really people wonder about it. I don't know. Did this change your view of what the original view may have been? Was we always learned that Moshe was heroic for doing this?
I feel more on that hero side.
Right, right. I tend to maybe old habits die hard, and the way you learn it as a kid just is like seared onto my brain. But I have a hard time, like, if I'm putting myself back in that time, I think I would have been, of course, I'm more in line with the David Tzvi Hoffman. I'm not looking for a legal argument. This is like your gut tells you you gotta do this.
Yeah.
But I don't know. What do you think, Josh?
I would say two things. At first, that from this episode, we establish. I mean, this is really the first moment in the Torah when we learn something about Moshe as a person.
Absolutely, this is our introduction to Moshe.
His character, his values.
Yep.
And that he is someone who stands up to the oppressed, who's a defender of the weak. And it begins to, establish his character as a future leader of the Jewish people. So you almost don't need this story for that. That's number one. Number two is that in order for Moshe to become Moshe, he has to go. He has to leave Israel. Right? He has to have the whole episode in Midian and with the burning bush, that moment. And if not for this episode, he doesn't leave. This is the trigger event in the development of who we become as an adult.
Yeah, right. And this is followed by Moshe trying to get the two Jews to stop fighting. And then Moshe defending the women, right? Yitro's daughters around the well.
Right.
And then the Midrash.
Hey, Yisrael, every time they mess up.
And then a Midrash that said Moshe would run out just to save one of Yitro's sheep and carry it back on his shoulder because the sheep was too weak. The first four times, three times, and the fourth by the Midrash, that we know anything about Moshe, it's about standing up for the weak. The difference is in none of those does he murder anyone. In this one, he does. Yeah, but you're right. This is the very first thing we learn about him. We know things about him, but he doesn't do anything until this moment, at least in the Torah. There are Midrashim with the crown and the whole. Heard of what happened to him as a baby, but yeah. So we need these stories to explain who he is, and right, and all through his career, he's a very emotional character. Just could be who he is, and maybe we close with the last line being, yeah, it may have been a mistake, but it was a useful mistake. And he doesn't do it again, right? He doesn't kill anyone again. Doesn't even go to war. When Israel finally go to war, he's praying, right? So maybe that's something. Okay, my friends, thank you for joining. Those of you who joined on Zoom, thank you for those who are here in person. And next week we will talk about the third topic in our discussion of murder in the Bible is on the topic of religious conflict. Murder because of religious conflict. So stay tuned. And then, as I said at the outset, after that, we're going to move on to Purim-related stuff. All right. Laila Tov, everyone.
Thank you, Laila Tov.
Bye-bye.
Bye. Shalom, Laila Tov.